This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 10th of May 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 10th of May. Your readers today are Jackie Dunellen.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: woman sterilised without consent. Tories hit record new low after disastrous showing. And people are so enthusiastic. So, Jackie, may we have the first headline story, please?
Yes, woman sterilised without consent. A Winchester doctor has been suspended for a year after he sterilised a woman without her consent. Dr. Olusegun Lawrence Olujide performed the sterilisation while the patient was undergoing a C-section at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on August the 6th, 2020, a Medical Practitioners Tribunal Service hearing heard. The tribunal, which met several times from February the 6th last year to May the 2nd, heard that Dr. Olujide had not received either written or oral permission for the patient to carry out the procedure, and that there was no clinical justification for doing it without consent. He had also failed to properly communicate to colleagues that he intended to carry out the sterilisation, and had not informed the patient the procedure had been carried out, failing to give her and her partner advice. Dr. Olujide admitted all the allegations. At the hearing, Katie Noel, counsel for the General Medical Council, said that the method that Dr. Olujide used to sterilise the patient, the application of diathermy to the fallopian tubes, is an outdated method. She also said that he had shown limited reflection following the incident, and that he had failed to identify where exactly he had gone wrong, although she did say he had reached out and apologised to the patient. The tribunal decided that Dr. Olujide's fitness to practice has been impaired, with the tribunal deciding to suspend him from practising for 12 months. Dr. Olujide asked for the suspension period to begin in 28 days' time, allowing patients under his care to be transferred to a different doctor in a timely and responsive manner. Ms. Noel added that the GMC was not calling for Dr. Olujide to be suspended immediately, saying that it had not received any complaints about his conduct since the incident in August 2020. The chair of the tribunal, Gulnawaz Hussain KC, said, "Having considered all submissions in this case, we have determined that a 12-month suspension is in order." Dr. Olujide is no longer working at the RHCH, but the tribunal did not say where he is currently employed. A spokesperson for Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust told the Chronicle, "We would like to express our deepest regret to the patient affected by the actions of Dr. Olujide. Obtaining patient consent is fundamental to ethical practice, as is made clear by the General Medical Council and the provision of good care. There is simply no excuse for what took place. We are very grateful to those colleagues who recognised that Dr. Olujide had carried out the procedure without consent and raised the alarm. Through them, we were able to take immediate action to ensure other patients were not put at risk, and we could give our sincerest apologies to the patient and explain what had happened."
Tories hit record new low after disastrous showing. The Liberal Democrats have increased their control of Winchester City Council after a disastrous election for the Conservatives. With 14 seats up for grabs, the Lib Dems gained 3 from the Tories in what were previously safe seats. The Conservatives lost Bishops Waltham, Denmead and Alresford and Itchen Valley. They also lost Central Meon Valley to the Greens, giving them all three seats in that ward. The count was held overnight on May the 2nd to 3rd, with the first results announced around about 5 a.m. on Friday. The result was Lib Dems 11 seats, Conservatives 2 and the Greens 1. The Lib Dems had been defending 8 seats and the Tories 6. The full makeup of the council is now the Lib Dems 33, Conservatives 8 and the Greens 3 and 1 independent. It is the Conservatives' lowest ever total in Winchester. In Denmead, veteran Tory councillor Mike Reid lost to Lib Dem Michael Bennett, and in Orsford and Itchen Valley, Fiona Isaacs lost to the Lib Dem Claire Pinier. After veteran Conservative Frank Pearson stood down, former councillor Linda Gemmell was unable to hold on to with another win in the Central Meon Valley ward for the Greens. Susanna Whites joined fellow Green councillor Malcolm Wallace and Danny Lee. Michael Kearns, Conservative seat in Bishop's Waltham, was snatched by Lib Dem Richie Latham. There were fears that former council leader Stephen Godfrey would lose in Monston and Micheldever, but he held on stiff competition from Lib Dem Richard Murphy with a majority of 201. A measure of the Lib Dem dominance is that they polled more than 50% of the votes. That's more than the other candidates combined in 8 contests. After the result, council leader Martin Todd said, "I don't think ever in our history have we won 11 out of 14 seats in a single night. We're delighted people have given us so much support across the whole Winchester district and that we have so many great new councillors joining the team. A lot of it is down to the record of our councillors. There is also a factor that people are sick of the government and there is a real desire for change. People are at the end of the line as far as the Conservatives are concerned." The Tories had hoped to issue parking. The issue of parking charges in the city centre may have gained traction, but it didn't. Conservative leader Caroline Horrell said, "We're in a difficult political situation nationally. A lot of people are very disgruntled by Westminster and disenfranchised from politics. We hope at the time of the general election there would be a better outcome than today." And there is a picture of all the Liberal Democrats cheering with their hands in the air.
And the final headline is entitled "Vintage Buses Return to the City." And if I can make a slight editorial comment, there are two subjects that I really enjoy talking about. One are old steam engines, and the other, which this article is about old buses. People are so enthusiastic. Dozens of classic buses trundled around Winchester and the surrounding villages on the Friends of King Alfred buses running day. More than 40 vehicles were on the road on Bank Holiday Monday, May the 6th, offering free rides in and around the city. Passengers were able to board in the Broadway, and the buses range from 95 years old to the most recent one from 2002. The Friends of King Alfred Buses chairman, James Freeman, introduced a newly restored Leyland Titan, and he said, "Here we are in 2024, and we are celebrating the return to service of this vehicle. It's from 1950. And we decided we would take two rotten old buses in 1990 and turn them into one lovely King Alfred bus. It has taken us 34 years, and we have just completed it." Richard Chisnell, grandson of Robert Chisnell, who founded King Alfred Buses, said, "There are so many vehicles here, it's a humbling event to be attending. It's amazing what James and his fellow trustees have achieved over the years, and we owe them a great debt of gratitude for keeping these lovely old vehicles on the road. Dave Fulford from Stanmore was driving the number 7 bus to Sparsholt. He was one of three generations of his family at the bus stay. His daughter, Jennifer 7, and Dad Graham were also on board. And Dave said, "I was born into it. My Dad Graham was the chairman. It's great fun, and it brings everyone together. Everyone smiles and waves as we're going along. It's a lovely day." Peter and Cheryl Jennings from Highcliffe were also enjoying the day. Peter, whose first job was as a bus conductor, said he brought back great memories. He said, "It's always interesting and somewhat nostalgic to see the buses that one remembers from when one was young." Friends Kathy Craig and Susie Stubbs, who met at a previous King Alfred bus running day, had their high-vis gear on and were helping to direct passengers. Both of their husbands are involved with the buses, and, by coincidence, they also live near to each other in Torbay. Kathy said, "Both our husbands are either driving or conducting. It's a wonderful day, and people are so enthusiastic to see the buses." Peter Osborne had come from Godalming to drive one of the buses, and he said the day was a highlight of his year. He said, the weather is not as bad as it could have been. The buses are all here and carrying lots of passengers, which is great. It is such an important day for Winchester, and it's great to be part of it." And this is quite a spread. It's accompanied by a whole series of photographs, but all these gorgeous old buses and pictures of people, the drivers there, and several pictures of passengers looking very excited as they wait to board the buses.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. The death announcements this week: Borcutt, Marie Winifred Borcutt, who died peacefully on the 23rd of April, aged 88. Billimore, Stephen Michael Billimore, died peacefully on the 2nd of May, aged 59. Cubbin, Shirley Diane Cubbin, died on the 3rd of April. Easton, Morris Easton, died at Winchester Hospice on the 23rd of April, aged 78. Field, Janice Ann Field, died peacefully on the 15th of April, aged 90. Hack, Barry Edwin Hack, died peacefully on the 11th of April, aged 71. Noah, Delvin Noah, the Reverend, known as Clarence, who died on the 15th of April. Mac, Richard Jeffrey Mac, died on the 13th of April after a short illness. McManus, Peter McManus, died on the 18th of April, again after a short illness. McMaster, Maureen McMaster, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 17th of April. Sanders, Marjorie Sanders, died peacefully on the 27th of April, aged 87. Silman, Margaret Silman, died peacefully on the 20th of April, aged 91. Taylor, Robert Taylor, died on the 21st of April, aged 98. White, Rona Mary White, née Mundy, died peacefully on the 19th of April, aged 96. And Whitman, Maisel Whitman, died peacefully at home on the 9th of April, aged 92. Now we move on to Christian comment. Andrew, please.
And this week's Christian comment is entitled A God Conversation, and it was written by Moira Redmond. What is a God conversation? Someone used the phrase recently and explained that in their usage it was not talking to God, but talking about God, sharing our faith with other people. Praying for other people is easy. Telling them about it can be harder in this secular age. I come from an extended family who've always prayed for each other, and were delighted to tell you so. At a family party, an auntie would grab your arm and say, "I'm praying for you," with a meaningful look. It wasn't always clear if this was for exams, or a better boyfriend, or you just looked terrible, or perhaps you hadn't been seen in church enough. And of course, there were candles being lit in church, a key element of Catholic life where I grew up. The candle, an intention, represents a request to God and is accompanied by prayers. My very secular friends were fascinated by all this, and however little faith they had, they would ask me, "Can you get your mum to light a candle for me?" Her candles were famously effective. Sometimes I would say, "I could light a candle." But the response was a doubtful, "Okay, but mum too, please." Now, my mother is too old to do candles herself, so it's my job. And a few years ago, I decided to be a bit braver about telling people I was going to pray for them. From friends outside the church, casual acquaintances, and chance-met strangers. Of course, I pray for friends inside the church too, but telling them would not be difficult. The first few times were honestly terrifying. I swallowed hard and thought, "This is going to be so horrible if they say I forbid you to pray for me." But no one has ever said that. I have never even had a neutral response, let alone a negative one. People who would swear blind they were atheists say, "That would be wonderful. Thank you." Strangers have told me that it's given them hope and cheered them up. If it seems right, I will say, "I am in a church group, and we will all pray for you, and we will hold you in our hearts and in our prayers." People will say, "That is the nicest thing I can imagine." A woman who feared for the life of her child said, "You are giving me strength." Paul, in his letter to the Romans, chapter 12, has relevant advice. Be fervent in spirit, serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. What a great description of how to live your life. Praying for others is quite a responsibility, looked at in one way, but I'm not complaining. It's something I can do. It can be very hard to know what to say to someone who has shared bad news with you. But saying, "I will pray for you," is the best response, and in my experience, always welcome.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Jackie, would you like to start us off?
Yes, I have a letter about the bus event mentioned in the headlines. Trip down memory lane. The hospitality businesses around the Broadway and High Street were certainly doing a roaring trade on Sunday as people came into the city in their droves to ride on the huge range of buses from past years that were giving free rides in and around Winchester. The public were taking full advantage of the opportunity to ride down memory lane, with more than 40 buses to choose from, ranging from the 1929 Leyland Lion, which is the pride of the King Alfred fleet, to a modern bus dating from just over 20 years ago. Numbers looked really good, all told, and we were fortunate that the bad weather did not set in until lunchtime. When it came, though, the torrential rain that we endured for about an hour presented a challenge to everybody, but people hung on in there, and undaunted by the wet, they kept on enjoying their day, the two open toppers still busy, with folk sitting in their waterproofs under umbrellas. It was a great day, enjoyed by all. Finally, thank goodness, the Broadway toilets, which had been closed the previous week, were open again for the bank holiday weekend. And that's from James Freeman, who, as we heard, is the chairman of Friends of King Alfred Buses Winchester.
And this is from Kevin Linley, who writes about sewage tankers. I was astonished to read David Killen's letter, Chronicle, April the 18th, lavishing praise on the disgraced Southern Water for running around-the-clock sewage tankers through our villages. He seems under the illusion that this is a good thing. Did he consider why the high groundwater is getting to the sewage pipes? These pipes are supposed to be watertight to prevent sewage leaching out the pipes when groundwater levels are low. This should ring alarm bells. Does he wonder what is preventing the installed pumping stations from pumping away the sewage? Are there issues at the receiving wastewater treatment works? Do we know where Southern Water's tankers are taking this sewage? Is it optimistic to hope that it isn't being dumped elsewhere without treatment? Fundamentally, this is another legacy of Southern Water's underinvestment and failed maintenance permitted by the Conservative government. Perhaps next week Mr. Killen will be commending our local fly tippers or the Conservative Party themselves for letting our country fall into such a terrible state of disrepair. And as I said, that was from Kevin Lindley of Abbotswood Common Road in Romsey.
And this is a letter from Eileen Berry, and it's entitled Decisions Already Made Over A&E. I make no apologies this time for bringing up the Winchester Hospital A&E. Now the general consensus is that we're all flogging a dead horse. It's already been decided that Winchester's going to lose his hospital, plus its A&E, but gradually. That we are going to lose so much of what is needed in regards to the huge population and expansion of people in and around Winchester District, it so happens that I myself have had to travel from Winchester to Southampton General Hospital at least 7 times. And for those 7 times, I've had to rely on the wonderful support of one or other of my family because I could not negotiate the journey there, the parking and the sorting out. Southampton Hospital is a bit of a maze, but that being said, had I not had the good support of my family, I would have possibly had to pay for a taxi or find some other way of getting there, especially if the hospital could not have provided that transport. And I have to say that I had the best treatment there. The point I am making is that there are people not as well off as I am with the loving support of family. It would be a nightmare for them. They haven't got it, and possibly, with the cost of living and everything bearing down on the elderly at the moment, they would be at a loss to know where to turn. So my personal experience has left me wondering how they have come to this conclusion that we can let our hospital gradually deteriorate. I have to say that nobody is listening to the ordinary guys out there, the working class. Those who haven't got all the support that I have had. And now I've got my ear to the ground, because I am from working class stock. There are still the strength of our communities, and I listen from all corners. To be honest, mainly they feel that nobody is listening. It's done and dusted. The deal has been done. The proposed plans for the hospital to be built in Basingstoke is going to put more pressure, especially on the elderly in terms of travelling there. The population here is growing as we speak. This is my last hurrah for the worst decision that they are making in our name. And that's from Eileen Berry, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
This is from Andrea Morrison, Station Drop-Off Point Frustration. I am above frustrated about the drop-off and pick-up points at Winchester train station. The once largest drop-off point is now half covered by concrete obstructions and the taxi rank. As soon as you approach the drop-off point, the taxis all move into the space blocking it. Then a bus will come hurtling up behind you, beeping their horn to make you move, which is incredibly difficult if you are letting an elderly or infirm person out of the car. On collection, the trains are seldom on time, and finding close parking is a nightmare. I have parked opposite and waited by, but not in, the bus stop, only to be harassed by a bus driver. He was hand on horn for me to move because there was another bus blocking his path. Where are we supposed to park to wait for arriving travellers when the trains are late? And where are we expected to drop off train passengers? Not everyone can afford a taxi. And that's from Andrea Morrison from Fremantle Road in Romsey.
Photographs open window into past. Thank you for the pictures of Winchester in days past, as featured in the Hampshire Chronicle recently. It is so interesting to see how things have changed through time, and photographs are such a useful record. As chairman of the Friends of St Giles Hill Park, we are always looking for artistic and photographic records of how St Giles Hill once looked from being bare and sheep-grazed in Victorian times to a hillside of trees providing the backdrop to King Alfred and the city today. There is no doubt that at some point the park was filled with designed-in views, and it would be good to match these today. If any reader has any artworks or photographs of the hill, then they can contact us through the website. Maybe we can then pass on a compilation onto the Chronicle to feature at some point. St Giles Hill Park is an absolute jewel in the city, and the Friends of St Giles Hill Park aim to ensure it sparkles evermore. Anyone interested in the park is invited to join the Friends, and if you would like to hear more about us, then the Friends' annual gathering will be at St Swithin's Prep School on Wednesday, May the 22nd at 7 p.m. for 7:30 p.m. For details, see our website, friendsofstgileshillpark.org/. I presume it's UK after that. This image of the archives and shows a view now disappeared from the park. That was from Dr. Harry Maycock of Quarry Hill, St Giles Hill, Winchester. And there's a lovely picture of trees and a path and an old-fashioned lamp, and you can just about see in the picture the cathedral behind it. Looks charming.
This letter is from Hayley Garner, who's the NSPCC local campaigns manager, and asking all of us to get more involved in child safety. The NSPCC believes everyone has a part to play in helping to keep children safe, from shop workers and cafe staff to librarians, swimming pool attendants, and passengers on public transport. That's why our Listen Up, Speak Up campaign is encouraging schools, businesses, and community groups across Hampshire to take part in free workshops offering advice on what to do if you're concerned for a child's safety or well-being, and who to contact for support. The workshops are being offered face-to-face and online, and run through a series of real-life scenarios, giving practical advice about how to approach challenging situations where a child might be at risk. We are determined to reach as many people and as many communities as possible, so we can inspire a movement of change that ensures all children and young people live happier, safer lives. We would love to hear from you about hosting one of our Listen Up, Speak Up workshops. So please do get in touch, and together we can make a difference. To organize or attend a workshop, please email London Southeast Campaigns at nspcc.org.uk. We require a minimum of 10 people at each face-to-face session. However, anyone can sign up to one of our free 10-minute online training by visiting www.nspcc.org.uk/speakup. And that's from Hayley Garner, the NSPCC Local Campaigns Manager for London and the South East.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we have editorial comment, please, Jackie.
Are Lib Dems getting too successful? Congratulations to the Liberal Democrats for their unprecedented success at the City Council elections last week. They contested 14 seats and won 11. This was as much a reflection of the unpopularity of the Conservatives in Westminster as it was an endorsement of the Lib Dems locally. The Lib Dem party leader, Sir Ed Davey, was so pleased with Winchester's result that on Friday afternoon he nipped down for a photo call in the High Street with supporters dressed as dinosaurs, representing the Tories heading for extinction, apparently. Lib Dems now hold 33 of the 45 seats on the council. The Tories are down to a historic low of just 8, with the Greens on 3 and one independent. Is the Chronicle alone in having concerns about the level of dominance? Connoisseurs of irony will enjoy the fact that the Lib Dems are benefiting from the first-past-the-post system, something they and their leader Martin Todd have long opposed nationally. They have three-quarters of the seats, but they certainly don't have three-quarters of the votes. Healthy democracy needs a plurality of voices. Party discipline means that most Lib Dem councillors will toe the line. The cabinet structure gives great power to a small number of councillors. The Conservative group still has experienced councillors in Stephen Godfrey, Caroline Horrell and Jan Warwick. But with only 8 councillors, will they be able to properly scrutinise what is going on? The Greens' success ensures their vital stance will be heard. As the Chronicle has expressed regret before that the studentification of Winnall and Stanmore has meant there have been no Labour members for many years. The Lib Dems may argue that for decades Winchester City Council was a one-party state dominated by the Conservatives and independents. The Lib Dems broke that stranglehold in the 1980s and 1990s, but do we want to return to that time, whether the ruling rosettes are blue or orange?
Thank you. Norma, you have first person, please.
And this is by Kimberly Barber, and she says, "My house is tech obsolete. Something disastrous has happened in my house this week. I turned on my Samsung TV, a once top-of-the-range smart television, bought when most people didn't know what smart was or did, and it seems its life is over. Midway through several Netflix series, I went to the familiar icon and pressed enter, and it seems we've been hit by one of the most annoying and unnecessary things in modern day life, tech obsolescence. The only good thing is that thankfully this did not happen during Baby Reindeer, as we watched all that series in 2 days. It's so gripping, it definitely a must watch. As a family, we have faced and overcome many tech traumas. We recently overcame Netflix's crackdown on sharing passwords and was cajoled into signing up and paying for our own account. We have also just got over the shock that Netflix is now going to be costing more than £10 per month. However, Netflix, this latest setback, might be a step too far. Up flashed the notice that Netflix is no longer available on this device. Our model has been consigned to the scrap heap. Yet it still works for normal TV, and we can get the traditional channels, and its BBC iPlayer has not yet caught up with Netflix's desire to march onwards, nor has Amazon Prime. But it will only be a matter of time before they all start dropping like flies. My son, who was also into several series on Netflix, does not understand normal TV. He'll often shout, "Pause it!" as he runs out of the room to get something. Long gone are the days of shouting, "It's starting!" that I remember so well from my childhood. The mad rush to finish what you're doing to get to the opening credits of Gladiators. It taught me a few lessons about timekeeping, that's for sure. But back to the point. making our TV a perfectly good, right size for its spot, functioning TV useless is maddening. It's also not the first time we've been hit by tech obsolescence. Apple, arguably one of the biggest offenders of this practice, forced me to shell out for a new iPad as my existing one could not support the apps my school's primary school had asked him to, I think that should have read my son's primary school had asked him to download. He's six. What kind of super operating system is needed to run an app that helps him to learn his times table? Luckily, both me and my other half are employed and can afford these tech upsets, but this level of comfort has not always been present in my life. And I am sure it's not present in many people's lives right now, with the cost of living soaring and supermarkets putting up their prices, bills going through the roof, mortgages rising and wages not matching inflation. And that's not to mention how extortionately expensive childcare can be for young families. But was this latest move from Netflix necessary? There are many arguments that up-to-date tech is needed to prevent hacking or cyber attacks. Some might say that tech obsolescence is planned by tech companies in order to keep the profits rolling in. The tech companies argue that the constant turnover is good for them and the consumer, as it enables them to drive prices down, making tech affordable for all by creating a vibrant market for it. In my view, this practice needs revisiting, and companies need to be targeted on lifespan, if not to keep families like mine happy, but to reduce the unnecessary waste. There is an old saying, they don't make them like they used to. There seems to be no pride in making a product to last anymore. In Livermore, California, there is a light in a fire station that was first switched on in 1901 and has only been turned off a few brief times since. It's the oldest known continuously operating light bulb. Now, if someone could make a tech in 1901 that could last for 123 years, surely today's modern tech giants could make something that lasts a little longer than a few years.
Andrew, you have a couple of items from Melgaron, please.
Yes, hello. Before I start that, I found myself, as Norma was reading there, nodding vigorously. Because last night when I got back, I was... Catherine said to me, and we also have a Samsung TV, they've dropped the, I think it was Channel 4 support or something. It's incredibly frustrating when... And we'll name Samsung, but other companies manufacture TVs as well. But... anyway, it's very, very irritating. Right, having got that off my chest, Belgarum's alternative look at the news, and we have two fun articles. First one is Frank breaks the gig record. The chart-topping singer, Frank Turner, broke the world record for the most gigs in different towns in 24 hours, with a final performance in Southampton. Hampshire singer-songwriter Frank Turner embarked on the challenge to play 15 solo shows, each a minimum of 20 minutes, for a whole day. The challenge saw him start in Liverpool at 12:30 p.m. on Saturday before heading to Huddersfield, Leeds, Sheffield, Chesterfield, Nottingham, Birmingham, Leamington Spa, before coming to Leighton Buzzard, London, Kingston, Aldershot, Portsmouth, Winchester, and ending in Southampton. The challenge supported grassroots venues and independent record stores across the country. And he finished the challenge with 5 minutes to spare at the Brook on Portswood Road. Many fans decided to follow him around the country with his record attempt, with a group even making the trek from Germany and the Czech Republic. Scott Woods, who's 43, blagged lifts from different people to follow the 42-year-old around the country. And he said, all the shows were really good. It's a challenge, but it's the reason why Frank decided to do it, and we decided to follow him in doing that. And Turner declared, "Proud, tired, grateful, long live independent music." And there's a picture there of him on stage at the Brook. The second article is Behind the Coronation Scenes. Southwestern Railway released hitherto unseen photos ahead of the first anniversary of the coronation of King Charles. The photos provide a behind-the-scenes look as more than 5,000 personnel from the Royal Navy, Army, Royal Air Force and Commonwealth Forces arrived at London Waterloo Station for their ceremonial duties. It was the largest movement of service personnel by train since the state funeral of Sir Winston Churchill in 1965. 9 trains were involved, including 7 SWR services and 2 private chartered services, with services arriving by Southwestern Railway from bases in Aldershot, Alton and Fareham. And that's accompanied by a photograph of the guards, the Goldstream guards, and looking absolutely fantastic, all lined up on the platform, having just got off the train. And they've got they're led by their drum, I guess the drum major as well. So it looks rather grand.
Thank you. Now we have the announcements. We start with what's on. A couple of items, both on the 18th of May, which is a Saturday, at the Arc. On the 18th of May, they're doing a film screening of Chasing the Sun, which highlights the power of cycling and its transformative nature. It's an award-winning film, and you can get tickets, £10, from the Arc. And also on Saturday, the 18th of May, at the Theatre Royal, 7:30 p.m., the legendary folk band Steel Eye Span have been playing for 55 years, and they're playing with old and new tracks. And if you want tickets for Steel Eye Span, 18th of May, Theatre Royal, the box office is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 10th of May at 5:22 a.m. and begins at 8:42 p.m. And next Wednesday, the 15th of May, it ends at 5:14 a.m. and begins at 8:50 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Jackie.
Hospice team opens new social hub. Young adults visiting the Jack's Place Hospice officially opened Jesters. Within the grounds, Jesters offers a range of social opportunities for its visitors. The opening was marked by a medieval-themed celebration, featuring the hospice's play and activities team and visitors exploring the facility over tea and cakes baked by the young adults. Inside, Jesters allows for multiple wheelchairs and beds, plus outlets for ventilation and oxygen pumps. The versatile space can function as a pub, dining area, cinema, sensory room and more. Claire Potterton, play and activities team leader at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Young adults that regularly visit the hospices were involved in the creation of the space, giving advice on what they wanted the space for and features that were important to them. A lot of hard work and passion has gone into creating Jesters, and we are delighted it is open and ready for the young adults to enjoy." And there's a photo of about 10 of the staff at Jesters outside it. It looks like a kind of wooden chalet structure. And they're all very happy and smiling, and the chalet is festooned with bunting.
And also on hospices, I have an article here. MPs discuss funding issues faced by hospices. The MP for Winchester and Chandlers Ford has discussed in the House of Commons the difficult funding issues hospices face. This came during a special debate in Parliament on funding for hospice-provided palliative care. The debate was brought forward by an all-party parliamentary group on hospices led by Peter Gibson MP, and calls on integrated care boards, ICBs, to urgently address funding. Winchester MP Steve Bryan voiced an issue facing the sector, which includes Naomi House and Jack's Place in Sutton Scotney. Mr. Bryan said, "The problem, on top of rising costs and inflationary pressures, is that my hospice, which cares for children and young people, is negotiating with no fewer than six ICBs for the same amount of grant. This is a challenge that many hospices face across multiple commissioning bodies and is complicating matters for them no end." Mr. Gibson thanked Mr. Bryan for his continuing support in his role as chair of Health and Social Care Select Committee, in which held a topical session on hospice funding the very next morning. MPs from across the House called for national and government attention to resolve the issue. Winding up the debate, Health Minister Helen Whatley said, "I will continue to work with the NHS England to ensure that palliative and end-of-life care is given the attention it deserves and needs."
School draws a line for history studies. An Alsford primary school has had a timeline panel installed, depicting historical events and people from the Stone Age to the present day. Sunhill Junior School's 20-metre timeline covers all aspects of the curriculum, with worldwide and national references, plus the addition of local historical events. The display has been paid for by the Arthur Stowell Fund, which is jointly administered by Alsford Historical and Literary Society and the new Alsford Town Trust. Arthur Stowell was a history teacher who settled in Alsford in retirement and became the author of several books, from which he derived no income, but used the profits to build his fund dedicated to the encouragement of the study of history by local pupils. Since then, the fund has been similarly built up from the profits of HLS publications and books authored by Brian Rothwell, Brian Tippett, and Glenn Gilbertson. On Friday, April 19th, teachers, members of the ALHS and the NATT committees, and class of pupils with their teacher Mary Woods, who have been actively involved with the design, gathered for an opening ceremony. Mr. Gilbertson, chairman of AHLS, recalled history being taught in his school days as an Anglo-centric series of dates, in contrast to the modern, inclusive, and themed approach. He then told the history of Arthur Stowell and expressed the hope that the display would be helpful and a source of inspiration for years to come. Head teacher Sue Griffiths said, "I would like to convey a huge thank you from the staff and pupils of Sunhill Junior School for this wonderful timeline, which has taken pride of place within our playground and for our pupils and their families to enjoy. We appreciate the support of the Alsford Historical and Literary Society and the Alsford Town Trust, more than words can express. Your generous contribution and the foresight of Arthur Stowell to make provision and plan for the future education of the children in our community has left an academic resource which will support our pupils for years to come. Thank you for believing in our school and helping us to make a difference." And there we see in the playground the 20-metre timeline wall and a number of the children, parents and some of the teachers lined up alongside it. Very good idea.
100 good deeds to mark 100 years. Ladies from Winchester's Inner Wheel are undertaking 100 good deeds to mark 100 years of the international organisation. The Inner Wheel Winchester meets on the second and fourth Monday of the month at Winchester Rackets and Fitness Club in Berwick Road. Members enjoy friendship as well as social events and meetings with a speaker. They fundraise for chosen home and international charities. They are currently donating to food banks, visiting nursing homes, and knitting blankets for causes such as the war in Ukraine. Maureen Chisnell, club correspondent, said the group had assembled more than 100 items donated by club members and delivered them to the Winchester Basics Bank. The Winchester group recently held a coffee morning at Rickstein's restaurant in Winchester and raised £250 for the Ellen Mead Eating Disorder Treatment Clinic to help pay for a sensory garden. And if you want to know more, you can go to their website innerwheel.co.uk, and there's a photo of three of the ladies of the Inner Wheel: club president Sonia Carver, secretary Patsy Ead, and past president Margaret Billington, and they're in front of a table full of all the donations to the food bank, tins and jars, etc.
New GP surgery taking shape. A new GP surgery currently under construction in Winchester city centre is quickly starting to take shape. The new St Clement's surgery is being built on the former car park on the corner of Friarsgate and Upper Brook Street as a replacement for the practice in Tanner Street. According to a new newsletter, the building working is about 40% complete. The newsletter said, "The main structure of the building is now complete and part of the roof structure has been installed. This means the building will be watertight in the next few weeks. Following completion of the structural facade, you will notice that the external skin of the brickwork is now 40% complete. The building has really taken shape. The laying of screed, a smooth subfloor, has been completed on the ground floor and the internal fit-out is due to commence within a fortnight. Once the building is watertight, you will also begin to see windows delivered and fitted. Your patience throughout these works is much appreciated. The new development will accommodate staff and patients, 15 consulting rooms, 3 treatment rooms, admin facilities, larger reception, waiting areas and staff parking. For more information, visit St Clement's Medical Build at co.uk.
A day out with the alpacas and goats. Residents of Shawford Springs Care Home in Otterbourne Road in Compton enjoyed a day out feeding alpacas and goats at Pet Lake Alpacas in the New Forest on Wednesday. The residents not only fed more than 80 alpacas and goats, but also learned about the animals, including their membership of the camelid family and how they are bred for their fine wool. Lise, one of the care home residents, said, "I so enjoyed meeting and feeding the beautiful alpacas and goats. It's been a wonderful afternoon." Jeanette, another resident, said, "The baby alpaca, or crea as they are called, was so cute and friendly." General Manager K.C. Manuk said, "Our residents have really enjoyed their visit to Pet Lake Alpacas today. The sun was shining and they all loved meeting and feeding the alpacas and the goats. We can't wait to visit again. We are always looking for new activities for the residents, and today we have seen the enjoyment and the therapeutic influence animals can have on people." And Pet Lake Alpacas has been in operation since 2010. And this is accompanied by a photograph. It looks a really lovely sunny day. And there's a person there in their wheelchair, but right up by the wire fence and holding out their hand towards one of the alpacas and the baby alpaca, or crea, as they are called.
Steep rise of shoplifting offences in county. New figures show a steep rise in shoplifting offences recorded in Hampshire in 2023. The British Independent Retailers Association, BIRA, said urgent action must be taken to address the concerning trend to protect employees and customers. Office for National Statistics figures show there were 13,705 shoplifting offences recorded by Hampshire Constabulary in 2023. It was up 49% from 9,186 offences in 2022. Marketing Director for BIRA, John Halliday, said the latest figures paint a troubling picture for independent retailers and businesses across the UK. He said, "Retail crime not only inflicts financial losses, but also poses a grave threat to the safety and well-being of shop staff and customers." He added, a survey by BIRA found 35.5% of shop staff had experienced verbal abuse from individuals in their shop. Of those physically assaulted, 70% opted not to report the incidents to the police. John said, "It's imperative that urgent action is taken to address this concerning trend and ensure the security of both businesses and their employees and customers." Nick Stripe from the Office for National Statistics said police recorded crime in the past 12 months shows notable increases in robbery, theft from the person and shoplifting. In Hampshire, there were 1,307 robbery offences in 2023, up slightly from 1,276 the year before. There were also 1,107 theft from the person offences recorded last year, a rise from 975 in 2022.
Children needed to shape Science Centre future. Winchester Science Centre, run by a charity, Wonder Seekers, wants 20 children to join its young steering group. The recruits will help shape the charity's future and provide their thoughts and insights on key topics with the science community. The current young steering group has spent 2 years successfully conveying children's perspective on important scientific topics. They've taken part in launching Wonder Seekers' 7-year strategy, been to events to pass on their knowledge to other children, and tested new workshops and Science Centre activities. Bethan, a 9-year-old member of the Young Steering Group, said, "It has helped me get a bigger understanding of science and the many ways we use science in our day-to-day lives." Another member, Tilly, 7, said, "I like how Wonder Seekers help the Young Steering Group to learn about our world and how we can help children and grown-ups learn about the world around us too." Ben Ward, Chief Executive of Wonder Seekers, said, "We believe that all children should have the opportunity to improve their lives and the lives of others."
Winchester Roundtable recently presented a sizable donation to a youth charity. A giant cheque for £8,000 was handed over to Winchester Youth Counselling on Thursday, April the 25th. Roundtable Chairman Joe Spencer said, "Winchester Roundtable does a lot of events throughout the year, including the Pedal Paddle Pace, the Bonfire, and the Bonfire, and the Saddle Sleigh. Santa Sleigh. I'm getting mixed up here. Mental health is really important to me, and I've chosen Winchester Youth Counselling as a charity to support this year. We use some of the funds we raise throughout the year to support Winchester Youth Counselling, and people can apply to us, and we're happy to donate. The Roundtable is also supporting the Winchester Pregnancy Crisis Centre, the Night Shelter, Winchester Penguins Swimming Club, Stop Domestic Abuse, and M&D. The Roundtable's next fundraising event is Pedal Paddle Pace on July the 7th. Winchester Youth Counselling founder Jill Guppy said, "We do outdoor work with young people. We do individual walk and talk therapy sessions, and we're looking to do more of that. We're in the process of recruiting another walk and talk counsellor, and we're going to put on sessions in some of the rural areas of the district. We're basing some of that in Alsford and the southern parishes. The money will be very useful to support our nature therapy group. It's an outdoor group for people aged 11 to 16, most of whom are autistic or identify as neurodiverse. The sessions will take place weekly. For more details, visit winchesteryouthcounseling.org. And that's accompanied by a photograph of Joe Spencer presenting the cheque for £8,000 amongst there, there's Katie Seymour, Jill Guppy, and Francesca Bannister. And they're presenting that at the Winchester Youth Counselling Centre.
King Charles to be Cathedral Friends patron. Following a royal tradition spanning more than 8 decades, the Friends of Winchester Cathedral have been honoured with the patronage of King Charles. The first royal patron of the Friends was the Duke of Connaught, Queen Victoria's third son. Following his death, King George VI became royal patron in 1942, and then Queen Elizabeth accepted the patronage on her accession to the throne in 1953. A letter to the Friends from Buckingham Palace at the weekend said, "Following the thorough analysis of over 1,000 organisations, His Majesty would be delighted to accept the patronage of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral." The chairman of the Friends, Bruce Parker, said, "This is such an honour for us and the cathedral as a whole. We know their majesties have had to slim down their commitments, and so we feel particularly privileged to have been chosen. Let's hope we can soon welcome our new royal patron to Winchester." In 2016, Queen Elizabeth, as royal patron, gave her blessing to the Friends for the composition of a piece of music in honour of her 90th birthday, which was named Queen Elizabeth's Winchester Carol. Before the premiere of the piece at a cathedral Christmas concert, the Queen had asked for a recording of it to be sent to her and gave it her warm approval. Winchester has been associated with royal activity and patronage for centuries past, with important events taking place in the cathedral. And there's a nice photo of King Charles smiling in a suit.
Great fun as rain fails to stop play at village event. Rain did not stop play at the Cheriton Village fete during returned to the Hampshire Village. The annual event was held on Monday, May the 6th, at the Old Rectory Garden from 1:30 to 4 p.m. Attractions included Morris dancing, a children's entertainer, lots of homemade produce, barbecue, tea stall, tombola, bric-a-brac, coconut shy, and more. A beer tent was also present, supplied by the Flower Pots Brewery, which is based just up the road, as well as a Pimm's tent. Hundreds of people turned out in support despite the rather soggy May afternoon. Organiser David Banyard said he was grateful for the support shown by the community. He said, "We were very worried about the weather. We set up in heavy rain and got very wet. But then I thought a few of the showers might be good for us, as people who had plans might think they would scrap them and come to the village fete instead. So far it's been really good. It's a lovely setup here, and all the profits this year will go to the church. People have been so supportive. It's been great fun." Bella East, 6, was enjoying the games at the fete with her mum, Emily. Emily from Overton said, "All she dreamed about last night was the coconut shy, and she really wanted a coconut. The fete is gorgeous. It's a shame about the rain, but I love village fetes. Everyone can come, and it's for all ages. It's great." Jacob Houston, 21, from Cheriton, was there with his friends, and they were getting competitive over a few of the games. He said, "It's great. I'm here supporting my local community." There were lots of entertainment for children of all ages, including a magic show in the village hall by Count Backwards, and lots of stalls geared up for children, the most popular being the Hooker Duck stand. Dad of three, Howard Geary from Alsford, was with his wife Ellie, children Casper 4, Ophelia 10, and Beatrice 7. He said, "We do every fete that we can. We're seasoned fete goers. It's a good turnout here, and considering the weather." Ophelia said she was delighted to win a football at the Children's Tombola. The annual event alternates venues, and next year it should be held on the village green. And there's lots of lovely pictures. There's a lovely lady clutching two, looks like hookahs, in their plant pots, smiling. And then there's Howard and Ellie Geary with Casper, Ophelia and Beatrice, all smiling with the football under an umbrella. There's a lady and gentleman with Pimm's and beer. There's the Wickham Morris dancers looking very colourful with their flowers round their hats and waving their handkerchiefs. And there's two gentlemen playing Splat the Rat, which I think involves putting something down a chute and you have to bash it as it comes out. And then there's little Bella East trying with her ball to try to get a coconut.
Well, continuing the theme of Great Days Out, and for me this is obviously a very special week, because not only did I have an article about the buses, but I've got an article here about steam engines. And this was the Twyford Waterworks Open Days. Full steam ahead for historic display. The latest open days at Twyford Waterworks took place over a slightly wet bank holiday weekend. The site was open on Sunday, May the 5th and Monday, May the 6th, giving people a chance to see how drinking water has been pumped from deep within the Hampshire Downs for more than 120 years. Visitors saw the Hawthorne Davy steam pumping engine at work, utilising steam from the Babcock and Wilcox boiler. An 1895 Crossley gas engine and other smaller pumps were also in operation. Lime kilns and water softening works, including the hydraulic engines, were working. People could also explore a nature trail and an industrial railway demonstration, visiting exhibits and displays. And this is accompanied by a magnificent set of photographs. There's Morley Slade, who's shown there, oiling a Crossley gas engine. There's a couple of absolutely magnificent steam-powered traction engines. Pictures of these being driven around the place. Picture here of Malcolm Hudson cleaning a 1919 Garrett, which is another traction engine. And pictures of people taking photographs and generally enjoying the day, albeit a little bit of a wet day.
Innovative lecturer wins national award. Winchester University's senior lecturer, Lim Teo, has been named Public Sector Lecturer of the Year at the 2024 PQ Magazine Awards. The awards ceremony took place on April the 22nd at Leo London in the West End. Mr. Teo expressed his appreciation to Dr. Julia Osgoby for his nomination and to Sarah Moore-Williams, Dean of the Faculty of Business and Digital Technologies and Director of the University of Winchester Business School, for her support. He was previously awarded the National Teaching Fellowship in 2022. Specialising in taxation, he was recognised for utilising digital technology creatively. Notably, Mr. Teo designed a mobile app that simulates a cafe environment where students play waiting staff. By answering questions correctly, students can replenish the cafe's food stock, serve customers, and earn reward points. Mr. Teo said, "This journey wouldn't have been possible without the incredible support of my colleagues at the University of Winchester, particularly in the Department of Economics, Accounting and Finance. To my students, thank you for your participation and engagement in class. Your commitment to learning inspires me every day." PQ editor Graham Hambley said, Lim is an absolutely fantastic tutor. He's a team leader, offers real guidance to his students, and throws in some innovative game-based learning too. He wants learning to be fun and engaging, and what is not to like about that? Sarah Moore Williams, who is a chartered certified accountant, said, "Congratulations to Lim on this richly deserved award. It is a testament to Lim's innovative and imaginative approach to teaching and his willingness to embrace new technology and adapt it to the needs of his subject and his students."
COVID spring vaccine drive hits the road. A new vehicle is on the road to help deliver COVID-19 jabs to communities where people may find accessing vaccinations difficult. The vehicle, run by NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight and supported by Hampshire County Council, will be travelling to different parts of the county to deliver the vaccine closer to people's homes. People do not need to make an appointment. They can walk in and have their vaccination if they're eligible. Those eligible for the spring campaign are people aged 75 and over, and adults and children aged 6 months and over who have weakened immune system. Examples of people with a weakened immune system include organ, bone marrow or stem cell transplant patients, those living with HIV, those undergoing chemotherapy and radiotherapy, or those with genetic disorders that affect the immune system. Dr. Matt Nisbet, GP and clinical lead for the NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight COVID-19 vaccination programme, said, "This spring the vaccine continues to be offered to some of the most vulnerable people in our community. For lots of different reasons, we recognise it may not always be easy for people to get to a GP practice or pharmacy for their vaccination. To make sure they don't miss out, this roving vehicle will bring the vaccine much closer to our communities. As well as delivering the vaccine, teams will also be on board to provide public health information on a range of topics such as blood pressure checks, healthy weight and menopause support." Councillor Liz Fairhurst, County Council Executive Leader Member for the Adult Services and Public Health, said, "While for many people coronavirus is a mild infection, for some people it can cause serious illness. Getting the vaccine means milder symptoms and a quicker recovery if you catch the virus. So I would urge every Hampshire resident who is eligible for the spring COVID jab to make sure they have it. Since the campaign started on April the 15th, more than 70,000 vaccinations have been given. Treatment is being offered to 211,000 people across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Those who are eligible do not need to wait to be invited and can book via the national booking system by calling 119 or via the NHS app until the 30th of June. The vehicle will deliver vaccines until June the 30th. To find out where the vehicle will be, visit hansiowhite.health.org.uk/your-health/covid-19-vaccination-program. My goodness. If you need help, then the NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight COVID vaccination helpline team will be able to help you." And I think that's probably a better option. Is 0300 561 0018. So that is 0300 561 0018.
Now, we often read out articles about the problems with our waterways, but here's an article which is talking about the health of one of our waterways. Meon Valley MP Fleck Drummond met a fly fisherman to discuss the improved health of the River Itchen. Mrs. Drummond met Andy Roberts from the Portsmouth Service Fly Fishing Association on the river at the Tichborne Estate near Alsford to discuss chalk streams in general. This part of the river has been restored from what used to be a feed for a lake, and the river has been put back into the original floodplain. Mr. Roberts said, "This is a remarkable little bit of river that has been restored for all the species that thrive in chalk streams." He explained to Mrs. Drummond the association is looking at the introduction of crayfish with the Hampshire Wildlife Trust. Excuse me. Saying the habitat is absolutely brilliant now that we've put the river back to where it wanted to be. The scale of this type of project is about 5 to 10 years, and it takes a long time to come back and be sustainable. The habitat is not just the river, it is an ecosystem. This can be replicated in other areas, and is indeed taking place. Otters have been seen in both the Itchen and the Meon, which is a sign that the rivers are thriving. Mr. Roberts agreed that compared to 50 years ago, there has been a great improvement in the chalk streams that he knows. And Mrs. Drummond added, "Thank you to Andy for taking the time to talk to me with such expertise about the Itchen and other chalk streams too. There is more to do, and we cannot be complacent, but the government is committed to ensuring progress through the chalk stream restoration strategy that has been in place now for 3 years." And this is accompanied by a photograph down by the Itchen of Flick Drummond with the fly fisherman Andy Roberts, and he's pointing out to the Itchen there and the great state of the river as it is now.
King's Award for Tea Business. An international tea business based in Chandler's Ford has received the King's Award for Enterprise for its sustainable development programs. Ahmed Tea has been honoured for its philanthropic work in the community, with the company having supported good causes since its inception in 1986, frequently giving up to 20% of its profits to charity. The business is one of 252 organisations nationally to be recognised with the King's Award for Enterprise in 2024. Locally, Ahmed Tea has supported the likes of Southampton General Hospital, Guide Dogs for the Blind Association, Stroke Association and Alzheimer's Society. They've also aided Parklife Community Action Cafe, Macmillan Cancer Support, Make-A-Wish Foundation and the Murray Parish Trust, which fundraises for the Southampton Paediatric Unit. Globally, the company gives back to the place it sources its tea, financing and building a cancer hospital in Sri Lanka, supporting women in the tea gardens of Assam and Kenya with nutrition and health programmes, and being an active member of the Ethical Tea Partnership. For over a decade, it has been partnering with Oxfam to develop a clean water program across rural Niger, a country severely affected by drought and climate change. By collaborating with a network of international distributors, Ahmed Tea match funds any charity or sustainable initiatives by partners abroad. And there's a photo of a lady surrounded by what are presumably tea plants.
And this is an article which may be mostly for children and possibly Andrew. It's chuffed to welcome Thomas.
Oh, yes.
A Hampshire Heritage Railway will be welcoming a special guest during May half-term holiday. Days Out with Thomas will be at Rockley Station on the Watercress Line from May the 25th to the 2nd of June. People will be able to ride behind Thomas the Tank Engine on the railway and watch two brand new rusty and dusty outdoor shows. The shows will feature characters from the famous Thomas stories, including Sir Topham Hatt, Percy Diesel and Toad, and Terence the Tractor will also be visiting the railway for the first time. Thomas will be decorated with bubbles and young fans can have a photo taken up close. Children can enjoy Thomas and friends' activities in the play pod zones at Rockley and Alton, as well as story time sessions and Thomas giveaways. Visitors can also take unlimited rides on the Watercress miniature railway and enjoy children's vintage fairground rides. Refreshments will be available at Rockley Tea Junction and at the variety of food and drink stores. Rebecca Daly of Watercress Line CEO said, "We have a great programme of Thomas and Friends entertainment to make it an unforgettable day out. Please make sure you book your ride with Thomas when you purchase your ticket online, and you can visit watercressline.co.uk." So there you go, Andrew. You're all set up for the bank holiday weekend.
Thank you, Norma, and I shall look forward to it. I shall definitely look forward to it. I was trying to explain to my grandson over the weekend why you had to boo at diesel engines. You can cheer steam engines, but you have to boo diesels. He looked at me and said, "Why?" But never mind. Right. Choir takes time to help restore a clock. A chamber choir will be performing at a church in Winchester to raise funds for the restoration of a rare clock. On Saturday, May the 11th, the Barton Stacey Chamber Choir will be performing at St. John the Baptist Church with a programme of ancient and modern choral music to fundraise for the restoration of the church's Elizabethan turret clock. The church in St. John Street is the oldest of the many parish churches in Winchester. The current structure dates back to the middle of the 12th century, although it's believed that there are Roman remains associated with it. The church was used by Winchester College choristers as a practice space before the college built its own chapel. The church is very active and a part of the East Winchester Benefice, being the parish church for Winnell. The clock, originally installed in the bell tower, was made between 1559 and 1562. It was removed from the tower in the late 1960s because of the state that it was in, and can now be found in one of the church's chapels. Originally, the clock had no dial face, and the bell was rung on the hour. Later, a clock face was introduced, which was no more accurate than the bell. Before the invention of the pendulum, the accuracy of time measurement was very low, and clocks such as this were often out by 15 minutes a day. The clock had to be wound twice daily, and the church warden's accounts show that in 1595 to 1596, local people held a collection to employ someone, quote, "for keeping the clock and chimes by the year," unquote. The wrought iron frame and much of the mechanism are original and similar in design to medieval cathedral clocks of the 14th century. This is one of the few early turret clocks to survive, and with its rarity, it is hoped that a suitable restoration, display, and publicity will draw visitors to St. John's, who could also contribute to the maintenance and upkeep of the church. And this is accompanied by some fine photographs. First of all, a picture of St. John the Baptist Church in St. John Street in a glorious sunny day, blue sky. The church looks extremely pretty. And then we have several photographs of the clock itself, which is, goes back many, many hundreds and hundreds of years. So it looks a very, very simple and crude mechanism, and I suppose if it was only accurate to within 15 minutes a day, it was fairly simple and crude. But it'd be wonderful to see that restored and put back into working order.
Girls Gazelles Running Group backed. An all-female running group has been sponsored by a Winchester house builder. Millgate Winchester is backing the Winchester Gazelles, which was established by students at the university to encourage students to enjoy running in a supportive environment. Robert Carter of Millgate praised the students for their initiative. "I've been immensely impressed with the girls' determination to encourage young adults to try running," he said. "There is plenty of opportunity for competitive running in our area, but that environment is not for everyone. The Gazelles have created a pathway for students to exercise and enjoy running in a supportive group. and we are delighted to support them. The group was established by Erin McGowan. She said, "When I began running, I could not find a university group suitable for beginner female runners, so I decided to begin the Gazelles. I pitched the idea to one of my housemates in late September, and we were up and running by November. Since then, we've grown to lead multiple run groups at our Wednesday meeting, and we aim to accommodate students with every pace and experience level. On April the 16th, the Gazelles took part in the Basingstoke Festival 5K. This was their first race as a club, and for some of the girls, their first race. Erin was delighted with their achievements. This moment of pride is one I will never forget. We crossed the finish line with multiple personal bests, despite the wet weather. I look forward to taking part in future events with these incredible girls and developing lifetime friendships through running. I can't wait to see what the future holds for the Gazelles." And there's a photo of the Gazelles. There's about 12 of them, all young ladies in their running gear and all holding medals.
Free rides to greet launch of more buses. Stagecoach will be offering free travel later this month and on Sundays next month to celebrate more buses along a major route in Hampshire. From Sunday, May the 26th, passengers will have more choices on when they can catch a bus which goes between Winchester and Romsey. To celebrate the buses will be completely free to use on Sunday, May the 26th, and Monday, May the 27th, as well as all Sundays through June. Service 66 will have an enhanced frequency with buses running half hourly during the daytime, Mondays to Saturdays, between Winchester and Romsey via Hursley, Ampfield, Abbotswood. Earlier and later journeys will be introduced on Sundays. Mark Jackson, operations manager, said Service 66 provides a direct link between the Cathedral City and the market town. It also serves the Royal Hampshire County Hospital as well as Winchester Rail Station, where customers can access fast trains to London, the Midlands and the North. I am confident this latest enhancement will provide improved connectivity, meaning customers can meet with family and friends, access leisure and health services, or simply do some shopping. As well as the increased frequency, all buses on Service 66 will run along the same route between Romsey and Abbotswood via Winchester Hill and Brashfield Road in each direction. Timetables can be found on stagecoachbus.com.
And a firm has just renewed its partnership to support theatre talent. Howden Insurance has renewed its corporate partnership with the Play to the Crowd charity to support Winchester's emerging theatrical talent. As long-term backers of Theatre Royal in the Hat Fair, the firm's contributions are said to have been instrumental in nurturing budding actors and performers. The latest three-year commitment mainly supports the Playmakers Youth Theatre. The programme helps children build confidence and resilience through drama and acting. The Youth Theatre gives participants a platform to create their own pieces, with their annual showcase in March having received rave reviews. Play to the Crowd is committed to making theatre accessible and affordable, providing financial support to those who need it, and creating a welcoming environment for all young people. Values that Howden Insurance fully supports. Kirsty Mason of Play to the Crowd said, "We are thrilled that Howden Insurance in Winchester recognise the important role participating in a youth theatre can have on developing a young person's life skills, from finding their own voice to building their self-confidence and improving their social skills. Playmakers are excited to show their theatre skills in their upcoming shows at the Hat Fair from July the 5th to the 7th. And that's supported by a whole posse of youngsters at the Play to the Crowd, and there at the Playmakers Youth Theatre Musical Theatre School, and aged from 4 to 11, and they're there with the corporate partner Howden Insurance.
Young ballet stars dazzle and dance. More than 350 dancers took to the stage in their annual display. Proud parents and friends packed the Thorndon Hall in Eastleigh on Sunday, April the 30th, for the annual Stars Ballet Dazzle and Dance Show. The dancers, aged between 1 and 14, took to the stage across three packed shows after months of training. The children take part in classes at Loxheath, Salisbury, Shirley, West End and Whiteley. Pupils from Westgate School in Winchester took part, as well as from Romsey Primary School and Nursery and Granger Farm Sports Park and other locations across Hampshire. And there's a range of lovely photographs. There's a row of what look like 4 or 5 year olds in multicoloured shiny suits, all striking various poses. Lots of girls in beautifully coloured tutus, including some slightly older girls in lovely turquoise ballet tutus, and the routine obviously included having to lift one of them in the air.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting them, and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Jackie Dunellan.
Goodbye.
Nor York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.